thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips and chat, just catch the full show, plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m, with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m, with new episodes every other week. But for now, enjoy the Happy Hour podcast. It's the Happy Hour with Holly and Paulina, a mix of music, chat, with a focus on sight loss, mental health and overall well-being.
And this week, it's our gardening special. More to come after Maroon 5. Just shoot for the
stars. If it feels right, then aim for my heart. If you feel you're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. It's the Happy Hour with me, Holly Tuke, and my co-host, Paulina, bringing you the best in music, mindfulness, and overall well-being. And we have a special episode today. With the weather improving, we're going to jump into our gardens.
Yes, we'll be joined by Wayne Vouden from the Blind Angler Channel, as he's not just full of fishing tips, but also has recently taken up gardening. So he'll chat tips for beginner gardeners. We dig out a special interview from the Redone Archives as our Robert Kirkwood speaks with broadcaster and gardening specialist Monty Don, and Damien Newman from Thrive returns with some great gardening tips for anyone living with sight loss.
So that's next, but first let's check in with the weather girls, because apparently it's raining men today.
Hi, we're your weather girls. Uh-huh. And have we got news for you?
You better listen. Get
ready. Thrive is a charity which uses gardening to bring about positive changes in the lives of people living with disabilities, ill health, or who are isolated, disadvantaged, or vulnerable. Damien Newman, their training, education, and consultancy manager, joins me once again to chat all things gardening and maybe offer some tips on how to improve your garden. It's so nice to have you on again, Damien.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So just a quick reminder, you're working at charity Thrive. Could you just quickly remind us what the charity does? Because you do a lot of great work.
Yeah, sure. So Thrive are a charity who, as we said on the last broadcast, have been around since 1978. And we champion the value of gardens for health and well-being. But in particular, think that there is a unique value to people who are faced with the challenge of ill health and disability in their lives. And that includes people with sight loss and people who are blind. And we have gardens across the UK that work with all sorts of different disability groups coming in, where we have trained, skilled practitioners who support them and guide them through the process of gardening in their groups alongside other people, making the most of that social value as well as the value from time in nature and time being occupied. We have all sorts of information and advice services as well. So our main website, thrive.org.uk, gives you a link to lots of advice and guidance, and also gives you a chance to sign up to our gardening club, which we have providing advice and information on how to garden for health and well-being every other week into your inbox, and links to our social media and the way that can support you as well into the wonderful world of gardening and the health benefits that it provides.
And the really wonderful thing about gardening as well is that it can engage all of our senses when we do it.
Yes, absolutely. So gardens are a very multi-sensory experience, essentially. We start by being outside, and essentially, everybody knows the joy of the warmth of the sun on their back or the feel of a gentle breeze. So by being outside in a garden, we come into contact with the natural world and the outdoors, where we have the weather and a feeling of fresh air through being outside. But obviously, in our gardens, we have all sorts of plants and also wildlife that add a sensory value as well. And it might be about different shades of colour. And for particularly for people with sight loss, perhaps contrast of colour becomes particularly important, but also the structure and form of plants, which means that they move in the wind. And obviously, when we're gardening, the chances are we might have some herbs or some vegetables and so on, so we can enjoy the taste of the garden as well, with all of those beautiful scents drifting across the space for us to enjoy and to uplift us. And so gardening is something that really does engage all of our senses, and generally speaking, provides gentle, rich sensory experience without any real jarring of the senses, because gardens tend to knit this sensory experience together really well. And there's some evidence behind this as well from the world of environmental psychology. We know that gardens have a restorative quality, which is massively driven through the contact with the sensory experience of being in a garden. So essentially, the quality of a good sensory garden is more likely to leave you mentally restored through resting your mental fatigue, because it's engaging you in an involuntary way. Everybody who enjoys visiting gardens can remember that feeling of being pulled towards a scent or a feature, something beautiful that we can see or something wonderful we can smell, that makes us want to explore it a little bit more. And this involuntary sensory experience is very rich in providing a restoration to our minds and to our mental health. And so the sensory side of gardening is really, really important in the way that we garden for health and well-being. And I think for people with sight loss, there's some value in thinking about some particular use of the sensory aspects of the garden. It might well be that there are some plants like rosemary, for example, or lavender, that have a fairly strong scent throughout the year. And these plants might be well positioned in a garden for somebody with sight loss to be able to provide an orientation to that space. Sometimes for orientation for people with sight loss, we might also think about noise, a permanent noise maker. And the most common one we can find really is a water feature somewhere in the garden that when we switch it on, helps us know where we are in that space, because the water feature never moves. Whereas many of the other living elements within the garden, whether they be wildlife, whether they be plants, they can change over time. But the sensory can help people with sight loss find their way around a garden, but also enable people with sight loss to appreciate the richness of the natural living world in that space. As well as the sensory aspects of consideration for design in a garden for people with sight loss, there's all sorts of other considerations that we can take place. So thinking through about the hard features of the garden, making sure that the pathways are in good order, to prevent slips and trips and things like this when it's a little bit more difficult to see what's coming in front of you. And so it might be that a friend or a family member can occasionally just make sure that pathways are well maintained and looked after. And also thinking about where you might have stopping points within a garden as well, in order to be able to then be able to take note of what's happening in different spaces. A stopping point might be an area where there's something to hold on to or somewhere to sit down and be able to then visualize the other part of the garden in front of you, perhaps using your other senses or using your memory to then move on to the other space. We might also think, as I mentioned, about that contrast of colours when we think about hard landscaping. And for people with sight loss, obviously the contrast of colour can be really, really important. So thinking about the natural world and then how that interacts with the built side of a garden and how those two contrasts might need to be made. And so often using either very light, hard landscaping features. You can find masonry paint to be able to paint walls, or wood paints to be able to paint sleepers and benches, a colour that is one that perhaps you with your sight loss can still see fairly well. So it might be very bright or very dark in order to create contrast between the built environment, whether that be fencing, benches, raised beds, sheds and so on, and the natural world, which tends to be predominantly green with elements of brown and also then flashes of bright colour or pastel colours as well. For people with sight loss, sometimes that that flash of bright colour can be very valuable, particularly in winter, for example, when the light levels are a little bit darker. We might think of plants that provide a bloom in winter time in order to just give us that flash of colour that we can focus on and use to help us get around that space. So thinking of the use of bulbs, for example, in a garden for people with sight loss. So there's white coloured cyclamen coming through in autumn and early winter, and then as early as possible in the spring, snowdrops again provide a really bright little flash of colour in our gardens in those darker months. And then as we move into spring, when it can still be a little bit dark, early mornings and later on in the afternoon, moving into the evening, then again with bulbs, white narcissi, daffodils, or even tulips and crocus are other useful ways of adding in some reliable colour into the garden at times when the light levels are low.
That's brilliant. And it's a lot of information, but it's so good to hear it. And are there any other tips on how we could make gardening easier if we do have sight loss?
Yeah, so again, you know, this is something that we explore on that side of our website that I mentioned in the previous broadcast and briefly already here today, which is that we have that area, carryongardening.org.uk, and we have specific advice about how to garden with sight loss. But perhaps sometimes, in not just for people with sight loss, but people with all sorts of challenges in relation to their health and well-being, probably benefit from some of the ways in which professional horticulturists work by being very organised, essentially, and by being very planned. So thinking about how you can arrange your shed to make sure everything is always in the right place. Sometimes that needs a bit of decluttering. So thinking carefully about what are the essential tools that can help you garden. As gardeners, we're very often very keen to try out a new tool. But I think for some people where keeping the shed tidy and keeping the glass house in good order is needed, then being a bit cautious about new gadgets and new ideas in the garden is sensible. We can also think about making jobs easier by breaking space up. And again, this might be built into design that supports access and movement around the space by thinking about those plants I mentioned that have a permanent scent about them in relation to things like rosemary or lavender, for example. And it might be that we divide up a bed by using a plant like this so that we are thinking about our gardening as bite size. So we're not trying to take on too much at once, and that we can remain focused on one area of our garden at a time, which often leads us to completing tasks and therefore getting the benefits of feeling as if we're achieving things and making good progress. But dividing up space sometimes by using those clean scented plants, like I mentioned, or even using hard landscaping features by thinking about using maybe a trellis or other sort of wood features, maybe a bench, things like this, in order to divide up the space. When we come to weed an area, it's a little bit more local to us and a little bit precise in what we're doing, so we can stay focused on that area, get that job done, feel as if we're making progress, because we can always move on to the next job of the day. Without doubt, the world of professional horticulture, where they have to be efficient, helps us in this way. You know, they would always, when going to the shed, have thought through what they're going to do in the garden that day and collect all of their tools in a wheelbarrow, in a bucket, and take it to where they're working, rather than do this to-ing and fro-ing to the shed that can leave us a little bit more tired, or for people with sight loss, put us through extra work that isn't necessary.
And obviously you can also bring in what you mentioned in regards to colors, contrasting colors into your gardening tools to make it easier to find them if you do have that little bit of vision left.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So for people with sight loss, with that little bit of vision, then yes, you know, often coloured masking tape can be really well easily applied around the handles of tools. There's a great company called PETA who make a range of ergonomic handled hand tools, and specifically they're designed in a very bright yellow because when they designed them, they took sight loss into consideration as best they could. And I know that it's variable in relation to color perception with sight loss, but yellow is often that color that people can still see because of that brightness. And again, thinking about that contrast, isn't it? So arranging our sheds so that perhaps there's a darker board that our tools are in front of, and again, might just help us find things a little bit easier, reduce any risk of frustration that there might be. And so, yeah, I think you're right. Color coding of tools can be a great way of working as well.
So a wealth of information that you just shared with us. And if you could just give us the website address again, because we can access all the resources there and it will be easier to kind of look up all of the things that you've already mentioned.
So it's thrive.org.uk, and that will take you through to all of that wealth of information we have. And it's also worth noting that Thrive essentially are passionate about supporting people to garden. And so if anybody ever wants to ask us a question by sending us in an email or giving us a call, they are very welcome to do so. Every week we give advice to individuals wanting to carry on gardening, wanting to overcome those challenges in relation to health and well-being, to make the most of what should be available to everyone through benefiting in a green space with activities we love and the joy of being engaged with all of the different senses.
Fantastic. Thrive's Damien Newman, thank you again for coming on to the Happy Hour on RNAB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me, an absolute pleasure.
Nelly Furtado and I'm Like a Bird on RNIB Connect Radio. It's the happy hour and we have a gardening special for you today. Holly here keeping you company this hour together with producer Paulina. Now we're going to dig into the archives and find out a little bit about sensory gardening and about travelling through French gardens with Monty Don, who you'll recognise as presenter of the BBC gardening television series Gardener's World.
Now, in the RNIB Talking Books Library, you can go on a French garden odyssey with Monty Don's The Road to Les Tonnelles.
The weather south from Orange had been a growing revelation. This was 1973. Hardly anyone went abroad. My mother had never set foot in France, and my father went once in 1939 to kill Germans, and then almost get killed by them at Dunkirk. He never went back. Other than the weekend in Paris when I was 14, the furthest south I had been before was the Isle of Wight. Now it was autumn, yet the sun shone from a blue sky. People were tanned, wore dark glasses and smiled a lot. X was full of people my age sitting in street cafes drinking lager, citron pressé, or real coffee. There were markets filled with vegetables I did not recognise, and crepe for sale on the street. By existing almost exclusively on bread and cheese, it was possible to live for just a few francs a day.
A clip from Monty Don's French garden odyssey, The Road to Les Tonnelles. It was read by Greg Wagland. I'll be joined later by a blind gardener to discuss all things sensory in the outdoors. But for the moment, Monty Don joined me on the line and told me about The Road to Les Tonnelles.
Well, I think the crucial thing is that it is not a book about French gardens. And this, it's bad to define things by what they're not, but it's in this case easier. It's a book about my experiences and relationship to France through the medium of its garden, and from the age of 14 up to nearly 60. So in other words, it's about my lifelong contact with France and its gardens, admittedly quite sporadic, but it's a personal book. That's the point. It's not an objective study. The selection of gardens is entirely personal and erratic and arbitrary, and it's really trying to look at gardens from the perspective of a traveller, really, rather than the perspective of a horticulturist.
Is it frustrating to write about gardens rather than having a TV camera there and you can just say...
No, I much prefer it. I much prefer writing about gardens and talking about them on telly. Much more frustrating to do it on television. Because when you write about gardens, you can write about anything. You can make it as long or as short as you like. You can describe things that aren't happening in front of your eye. You can describe things that happened in 1662 and 1837 and yesterday and last autumn and next year. On telly, you can only show what there is to be seen. Mm-hmm. And also, you've probably got about 2 minutes to do it. Writing books is freedom. Writing books is me saying what I want to say. Television is the art of compromise. I mean, it's an interesting art and one that I love, but it's all television is about trying to cram at least a quart into a pint pot, and usually more like a whole great big milk container lorry into a pint pot. So in other words, you're always whittling down. And then you see, when it's filmed, about, up to three quarters of what we film will be chucked away. And at least a third will be chucked. And I have no control over what is thrown and what is kept. I'm not in the edit suite. Very often, what I consider to be my best work is never shown because there might have been sound problems or the images may not have quite worked or... It just felt that it didn't quite fit in with other things. So that's the downside of filming. The upside is you're working as part of a team of experts who are very good at their jobs, and you are just one cog in that machine. Whereas a writer, you are the machine. It's you on your own. And a book like this one, I sat where I'm talking to you now in this room for, I wrote it very fast and very intensively because it had years of notes and I'd spent the whole year traveling. But it still took me about 12 weeks of doing nothing else at all, from morning till night, to do that. And if I hadn't had a family, I wouldn't have spoken to anyone else. I would have had no other contact. So writing is any book. It doesn't matter if it's the great novel or if it's a book about dog grooming. It's a lonely, solitary, repetitive work. And what makes it good is when it comes alive, when it becomes fantasy, when what's in your head goes onto the page.
Would you say that's the same as gardening? Could that be lonely and repetitive?
No, it's not. Gardening is very different. Gardening, you're working with nature. That's the whole thing. You're not trying to... It's a terrible mistake that people make about gardens, which is trying to create a garden and impose it onto the landscapes or onto the plot. Good gardens, all good gardens, are the synthesis of mankind's creativity and the natural world's bounty. And at their most successful, they harmonize, sometimes in surprising ways, but they work together always. And I think when you're writing, it's a blank page. It's absolutely what you put on the page. Television, as I say, is a machine and it's a team. And when it's good, it's greater than the sum of its parts. But you're still, it's an artifact. You know, you still can fiddle around with it and you can change things. Gardening is much more intuitive, much more responsive. It's a longer, slower, good gardening happens across years, lifetimes. Increasingly, I feel that happen across centuries, you know, that my garden is just a layer, a very thin skin on this earth. And when I go, someone else will add another thin layer. And so it builds up. And sometimes I feel when I'm in the garden, I'm connected to thousands of years of tending this soil. And that's a very enriching experience. And other times you're just dealing with one plant. It's very beautiful. Mm-hmm. And you're looking after it. So I think gardening is creative. And I think it can be an art form. But it's very different to writing.
Now, I'm also joined on the line by blind gardener Kevin Smith. Now, Kevin, how did you get into blind gardening?
I always loved gardening. When I could see, I lost my sight 5 years ago, and when I could see, I always loved gardening, and I was a little bit lost for quite a while. had the great good fortune to move in with Pocklington in Roehampton. And one of the care workers saw, you know, I was talking to him about how much I love gardening, and he found up a charity called Thrive, who work up in Battersea Park. Well, they died about all over the place, but Battersea Park's where I went. I've now got a qualification in horticulture, and it's lovely. It's absolutely lovely.
Now, Kevin, why do you feel it's important to support Thrive and RNIB?
Well, I lost my sight very suddenly 5 years ago, and I've had so much help from people that I didn't know existed until I lost my sight. And they've supported me, even when I'm shouting and yelling at them, and got the ump about life. It's all right. It's been okay, and they've listened and helped. And I think it's so important to put back. It's like you know, when you're growing, you know, you've got to make sure the earth's right for the plant to grow in. And if I help dig the earth over and, I don't know, put fertiliser on it, then other plants can grow. And hopefully by being part of something, putting something back, somebody else gets some help as well. And they've been wonderful to me. Absolutely wonderful.
Now, Kevin, I'm also joined on the line by Monty Dawn, and I believe you've got a question for him.
Yes, hello, Monty. Thanks for taking part. It's just really about how important do you think texture and sound and scent and the non-visual aspects of gardening are?
I think it's absolutely key. And I think in gardening, as in most things, that people with good sight tend to let that have much more dominance over their other senses. But, years ago I wrote a book called The Sensuous Garden, which was all about using the different senses and how you can garden to make the most of them. And I suppose after sight, the most obvious one is scent, because scent works on such a primeval way. It goes right to the oldest part of our brain. And as we know, scent and memory are inextricably linked. Because you can't recognize smells except through memory. There's no way of knowing a smell except through an experience. So, for example, you smell an orange, and you will identify it as an orange through something that happened to you in your past. And the two parts of the brain are exactly the same. So it's very personal and very powerful. And when we're designing a garden for scent, we should use that. Just think, you know, what scents do we want? It's not enough just to say I want it to smell any more than I want it to look. You know, we don't plant plants just because we want colour. We want to choose what colour. How do we want it to work? How is it going to affect us? Do we want a smell that's going to invigorate us or to calm us down or to remind us of our childhood or the day that we got married or you know, a perfume or a meal or whatever? Designing scent can really dramatically affect your garden. So, A, include it as much as possible, and B, work on it. And also different times of day. So, for example, plants like tobacco plants only really smell in the evening. A lot of plants have oils which heat up during the day, then release their scent at night, particularly white ones, because that attracts pollinating insects at night on a warm day. So where are you going to be at night? You don't want those scents happening in a part of the garden you never go into in the evening. You want to be where you sit, and so on and so forth. So understanding that dramatically enriches one's experience of the garden. Taste is the other one that is clear. Is, you know, we grow food to nourish ourselves, but it's got to taste good. It's got to have real taste. And as any keen vegetable gardener will tell you only too willingly, no food tastes better than your own veg straight from the garden. And it's not enough just to say, oh, it's food. It's, you know, what are you eating? What does it actually taste of? Try and describe it. New potatoes from the garden taste much sweeter than any new potato you can buy, and that's because the sugars turn to starch very quickly. And so if you eat them within a few hours, they will be sweeter. And that's true of sweet corn, and it's true of asparagus and peas. Which is why, you know, peas tend to be frozen in the field. So that maximizing taste, and that those are the two obvious ones, but the other two senses which I feel we don't really use enough are sound, particularly plants like grasses. When the wind catches them, they rustle and shift. When you have the leaves I have hornbeam hedges in my garden, and at this time of year, just before they grow their new leaves, the old leaves are very dry and brittle. And when there's a slight wind, they patter. It sounds exactly like rain. And you hear this rain falling on a clear, bright day. And it's the leaves. It's a very particular sound. Frost has a sound when you walk it on the grass. Obviously, wind makes sound, but you can attract birds to your garden. Sound is really important. The sound of your footfall on a mossy, softer surface as opposed to a hard surface.
And the sound of running water as well.
Incredibly important. Really, really important. And the final one, which, again, we undervalue. I'm sure everybody's aware of it, but we don't value its importance, except for to people who are completely blind, is touch. You know, plant plants so that when you walk, you can trail your hand along and touch. And sometimes they'll have a scent. If you walk past a rosemary bush and run your hand down the length, you will release oils that will have, not only will you feel it, but you'll smell it. Other plants are very soft and feathery. Mm. If you have a box hedge, I've got a box hedge, and I like just to, automatically, without thinking, I just brush my hand along the top of it as I pass. Touch both on your hand, on your feet. Maybe you have a gap in the garden where you have to slightly push past very soft plants that aren't at all abrasive. This is all part of the language, the sensory language of your garden. And it doesn't matter whether you're sighted or not. To waste that opportunity, not to fully embrace it, is not to fully embrace the faculties that you have. It doesn't matter whether you're fully sighted or totally blind or partially sighted or whatever. Not to embrace all the possibilities of your senses. It's crazy. And people have this idea that, oh, if you're blind, then you need to develop your touch or your taste or whatever. I think that's just rubbish. I think we all do. You know, we all should use our senses to the maximum ability. And the best place to do that is in the garden. Just on your skin, you can feel a kind of air that hits you from different plants. Sometimes it's hot and bakes back. Sometimes it's cool. That's all important. It's all feeding in and the message. And some gardens that we love, actually, if you try to analyze it, we love it because it just feels nice. And that's about as articulate as you can get. I often walk around my own garden barefoot, silently. So just try and I would say to anybody, is go into your garden and don't try and see, smell, hear, or touch anything. Don't try and think anything. Just let it come to you. If you walk gently, let it come. And all kinds of things start flooding in and coming to you. It's incredibly enriching, but at the same time, restful experience.
It is. All of a sudden, you've got no worries. You've got no troubles. And you think, well, I'll just sit here for a bit longer.
Yeah, exactly that. That's good.
Monty Doan and Kevin Smith, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Robert Kirkwood there chatting with horticulturist and broadcaster Monty Doan. And you can find Monty's book, The Road to Leitona Lay, in the RNIB library. Just visit readingservices.rnib.org.uk and sign up for your free account. And we still have more gardening tips coming up on today's special episode of The Happy Hour with your hosts Polina and Holly. That's after this one from Bob Marley.
Don't worry about a thing.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and it's a gardening special on today's Happy Hour. Now, we're going to hear some advice for beginner gardeners.
Hi everyone, my name's Wayne, and I'm from the Blind Angler YouTube channel. And on that channel, we catch fish, and we also cook the fish with produce that we like to grow in our allotments. Gardening is a lovely pastime, something that you can do at home, either on your own or with loved ones, and you can also go further afield and get yourself an allotment plot. Tips for doing gardening, I would say, would be, first of all, look at the garden or try and map the garden out by walking around it knowing about where you want to plant things, making sure that what you plant won't be affected by other plants. So if you have smaller vegetables, for instance, say like broccoli, that are going to be close to the ground, you don't really want to grow them next to a big kind of bean plant, which would block the sunlight. So mapping out your garden before you plant is very important. Also knowing where the sun rises and sets and where the garden gets the most sun is where you kind of want to put your plants. Tips would be, first of all, a kneeling mat. Obviously, this helps with your knees when you're kneeling down, but at the same time, if you have to leave the area that you're currently working and then come back to it, the kneeling mat is a good indication of where you last were, so you don't start working on a different area that you don't necessarily need to work. Garden equipment, especially little trowels and forks and stuff when you're planting and weeding. Most of these come in dark colours, dark coloured handles, blacks, browns, greens, etc. So if you can get them with a yellow handle or a white handle, or put some electrical tape, maybe white or yellow, on the handle, it just means when you put it down on the grass or on the mud, etc., it's easier to spot if you do have a bit of vision. Also, if you're using equipment like garden forks and rakes, when you finish with them, put them away. Or if you're gardening with someone else, make sure that they are aware that you're visually impaired, or they put it away or let you know where it is so you don't cause yourself any injuries. Patience is a big thing as well. So sometimes, especially in the spring that we've had this year, you know, it's a lot colder at the moment. So with your plants, start them off indoors in little seed trays, and then just let them grow, get bigger, and then you harden the plants off by taking them outside during the day and then bringing them back in at night so they can get used to being outside, because if you take them straight out, the shock overnight, because obviously the temperatures do drop, can actually damage or kill the plants. So you kind of harden them off by taking them outside for an hour or so and bringing them back in, etc., and you just build them up until they're ready to be planted. The taste difference is incredible, absolutely incredible. So once you have grown something and you want to go something easy, strawberries is probably a very good one. And then you can do like a taste test. You can buy some from the shop and then you can test them against what you've grown. But you want to know what you want to grow. So with vegetables, for instance, are you going to grow a lot of one thing or a lot of multi vegetables? So I would always say a little of everything is probably a good way to go, because some things will go well, some things won't. And if you're looking at getting an allotment, maybe if you can do it with someone that you are close to. So I have an allotment with my cousin Matthew. We are very close. So when I need help either getting there, getting in, out, moving around the allotment, you know, he's there on hand, ready to help me. And as time goes by, you'll pick up little hints and tips to move around the garden yourself, so you know exactly where you are, which comes to with the mapping. In our allotment, we have 5 raised beds, and I know what is in each raised bed. So raised bed number 1 is onions and leeks. Raised bed number 2 is broccoli. So it's all about knowing where things are for you to work. And if you're with someone, obviously they can keep you safe. They can also do half the work, so it's easier. And yeah, it's just a lovely, lovely hobby, very tranquil. Listening to the wildlife, the birds singing, it's just absolutely beautiful. And at the end of the day, it's more about the taste that you get back, not being self-sufficient, because you don't give up your greengrocer, but the taste difference is just incredible, and something that really anybody can do and enjoy and see the benefits.
Wayne Vowden there with some advice for how to start up gardening. You're listening to The Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio.
ABBA on RNIB Connect Radio. And that's it for today's Happy Hour and our gardening special. Holly here, thank you for keeping us company during the show. Did you enjoy the special? Get in touch. Paulina, what are those details?
So I've written them down this week. So you can email radio@rnib.org.uk or tweet us at RNIB Radio. And we're also on Facebook. So feel free to message there as well. We're RNIB Connect Radio.
And if you missed any of the advice today or would just like to catch up on a previous episode, then search for RNIB Happy Hour Podcast through your favourite podcast provider.
So that's it for the show today. Catch us on the next Happy Hour. But for now, we're going to leave you with You Two and It's a Beautiful Day.
See you on the next episode.
The heart is a blue, shoots up through the stony ground.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips, and our chat, just catch the full show plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. And we have new episodes every other week. But for now, I hope you enjoyed the Happy Hour podcast and we'll see you on the next episode.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.